Track 17. Our feature, Past Lives, is about the people who made our county great. The august Mr. Jessop. Chris Armstrong investigates the life of a great Norwich headmaster and scholar.
Augustus Jessop came to Norfolk in 1859 at the age of 36 to take up the headmastership of Norwich Grammar School. He didn't arrive a moment too soon. Despite its antiquity, it had been founded in 1096, the school was in a poor way with just 30 pupils. By the time he left 20 years later, the school was flourishing as it is today. He had cut his headmasterly teeth in Cornwall at Helston Grammar School, where he successfully met a similar challenge, tripling the number of pupils in the 5 years he was in post. Teaching had not been his original ambition. In fact, he appears cordially to have disliked the schools to which he himself had gone. He had started at a small prep school near Epping Forest, whose proudest claim in their advertisements in the Times was that the boys had separate beds. Later he attended a boarding school in Germany. For much of his childhood, the family lived in Brussels, although his father was a barrister practicing at the English bar. His schooling finished, Augustus hoped to follow his brother to university, but his father initially scotched that plan on grounds of economy. Instead, he was found a place, through his family connection, with a shipping company in Liverpool. This was not greatly to his taste. His interests were academic, and particularly, literary. In time, his father came round, and at 24, Augustus went up to St. John's, Cambridge. But far from being just a footnote in his story, Liverpool had a great significance for him. It was there he met Mary Ann Coatsworth, the daughter of the senior partner of his employer, whom he was subsequently to marry, and without whose support his successes at both Helston and Norwich would have been much harder to achieve. Graduating in 1848, he was ordained the same year and appointed to a curacy nearby at Papworth. He anticipated that the curate's role would leave him ample time to work on his chosen subject, the work of John Donne, and the location, close to Cambridge, would provide plenty of scope for research. As it transpired, the curacy proved more demanding than he had anticipated, and even the short distance from Cambridge was not easily managed. It was 7 years before he was able to publish his first book, an annotated version of some of Donne's work. By then he had concluded that the Papworth curacy was not conducive to achieving his ambitions, and he started to look for another role. He had married during his curacy, and both he and his wife had undertaken some teaching in the village school. This experience may have influenced him in his application for the headmastership of the small and struggling Helston Grammar School. Certainly, he would have seen the longer holidays as a good opportunity to write in relative peace. His stay at Helston was very successful, but left him distant from the mainstream of literary life, and he applied for the headship of Norwich Grammar School. At Helston, he had achieved a huge increase in numbers of pupils during his short stay, and the energy and imagination he brought to Norwich soon resulted in an increasing role there too. This was an age of reform in education. Thomas Arnold led the way at Rugby, and Jessop followed suit at Norwich, widening the curriculum by adding modern languages and mathematics to the classical tradition. In some ways, he went further than Arnold, promoting team sport as part of the broader development of pupils. He championed the school fiercely and found the funds to modernise and improve the buildings. He was a great believer in encouraging pupils to study privately as well, and he introduced a whole range of new examinations and prizes to incentivise them. As usual, these prizes were generally books, and perhaps one can detect a little self-interest in the choice of a book of his own sermons as the Divinity Prize. In his management style, he was energetic and occasionally combative. Any criticism of the school or his methods saw him leave his corner fighting, and there are several examples of acrimonious exchanges in the press. And despite his success in increasing numbers while greatly enhancing the reputation of the school, he was not always seen in the fondest light by the governors. Despite their disagreements, there was general recognition of the scale of Jessop's achievements, and when, after 20 years, he decided to stand down as head and return to parish life, he accepted an invitation to become a governor himself. Jessop was instituted to the living of the small village of Scarning, where he was a neighbour of my great-grandfather, the diarist and vicar of East Dereham. The pair, already acquainted, became friends. Armstrong admired Jessup's scholarship, but found him a little eccentric. Why Jessup chose to return to parish life is a matter of speculation, but it seems probable that he had found the task of running a boarding school too demanding to allow him time to devote to his literary interests. Certainly his output in his time at Scarning was prodigious and propelled him into national notice. In his biography of Jessup, Nick Hartley lists all his works, and it is difficult to find a year in which he published less than two. An indication of the esteem in which his work was held can be found in a document held at the Norfolk Record Office. It is a letter from a London publisher offering him a contract with royalties of 20% and an advance against them of about £5,000 in today's money. He turned it down. He became a frequent contributor to the 19th Century, perhaps the leading literary periodical of its time. Other contributors included Gladstone and Tennyson, so he was in distinguished company. The magazine was a vessel for impartial debate on matters of science and religion in particular, and essays by contributors were not subject to editorial interference, which must have suited Jessup, who was inclined to be quite forceful in his prose. His main concern, as was appropriate for a country clergyman during an agricultural depression, was the condition of the rural poor. He was appalled at the accommodation and working conditions of agricultural labourers, and concerned too that they were, in a sense, intellectually deprived. These concerns are evident in his work, Arcady, for better, for worse. The parishioners were probably more interested in their physical well-being than realising any intellectual pretensions, and, initially at least, they were not entirely at ease with Jessup. Indeed, in a dispute about the payment of a small parental contribution to the running of the village school, it had not been his decision, he was just the messenger, village anger was so intense that, reportedly, the mob even stoned his rectory. His predecessor had apparently been an habitual smoker and toper. Perhaps the villagers found Jessup a trifle austere by comparison, or perhaps 25 years as a headmaster gave him an air of superiority which grated at a time of great hardship. In any event, he had a difficult early period at Scarning. Although over time his goodness and his concern for the well-being of his parishioners won them over. Jessup was far more than just a parish priest and author. He was a scholar and archaeologist of some note, consulted by M.R. James, Dean of King's College, Cambridge, whilst researching St. William of Norwich. James is perhaps best remembered for the ghost stories he wrote. Jessup, on one occasion, claimed to have experienced a psychic phenomenon himself. He claimed that while working one night in the library at Mannington Hall, he had seen an apparition of an old-fashioned, ecclesiastically dressed man picking through the documents Jessup had laid out on the table, who disappeared, then reappeared to look at what had been discarded when Jessup moved on to another document. Jessup wrote up the story, and it became the subject of much local dinner party gossip. The general view seemed to be that Jessup had been dozing and had actually seen his host's butler creeping into the library late at night to sample the contents of the port decanter. Jessup was a man of great scholarship, an author of some note, a reforming educator, and a caring parish priest. He was also a man of some ambition. When researching an entirely different character, I found in the County Record Office a series of four letters from Jessup to Lord Walsingham, written in just a few days. The first referred to the rumoured resignation of the Dean of Norwich, and Jessup asked Lord Walsingham to recommend him for the role to the Prime Minister, Lord Salisbury. The next day he wrote again, concerned that his previous letter had been presumptuous, and begging Walsingham's forgiveness. The third, still concerned about the indelicacy of his first letter, explained that he had heard Lord Salisbury had already been canvassed on his behalf. Despite all these efforts, he didn't get the job. Perhaps just as well as the final letter, his fourth, explained that he had just discovered the stipend was just £900 per annum, and he didn't want the job after all. Not all Jessup's correspondents were so self-seeking. I discovered in my family papers a couple of letters from him in old age to my grandfather, himself a Norfolk clergyman. It is clear from these that Jessup regarded him as something as a protege, and that my grandfather found Jessup a valued advisor. For the full story of this remarkable man, see Augustus Jessup, Norfolk's Antiquary, Tor, 2017, by Nick Hartley.